Earplay is produced by National Public Radio and WHA under grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. Earplay presents Kennedy's Children by Robert Patrick. Robert Patrick recently returned from a nationwide tour of Robert Patrick Play Festivals and productions of his work in a dozen states. 32 of his works have been published by Samuel French, and a new play, My Cup Runneth Over, was selected for an anthology of the best short plays of 1980. He also writes articles for Dramatics, Playbill, and other magazines, has received a Rockefeller grant and a number of playwriting awards, and works to find new playwrights and get their work produced. Patrick's travels began in 1968, when his first play, written originally for New York's first underground theater, the Café Chino, went on to a production in Holland. He's been traveling ever since to wherever his plays are performed. Earplay asked Patrick to adapt his best-known play, Kennedy's Children, for radio. Kennedy's Children by Robert Patrick.
For me, it was the most important day of my life. I measure everything as happening before it or after it. I remember every detail, every instant, every little bit of information as it came in. I was at my desk. It was lunchtime. The executives had gone out. I was in a hurry to finish page 44 of the May-June issue of Salon Hairstyles. Oh, not that I wrote it or edited it. I just pasted the captions to the photos before they sent it out to the press. And I remember it was a gray, gray day here in New York. And then, all of a sudden, Mr. Kanowski, the advertising sales manager, came bursting in. He was a little cross-eyed and red-faced and excited, and he said, "Quick, turn the radio on. The president's been shot in Dallas."
"Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Your Honor, I will handle my own defense. My exhibit number A will be my secret Vietnam War diary. Dear Mom, believe it or not, I'm writing to you on pot, marijuana. Everybody here smokes it. The MPs even stand guard on it. And my buddy, Chick, says he even goes into combat high. I don't see how they do it. I keep falling down, and they all keep laughing at me, and I got very scared at first. I thought they were all members of some secret society. I thought the Viet Cong turned them on. Chick says a lot of people get ideas like that at first. I'm scared of being caught. But the weird thing is, I'm even more scared of my buddies. They have been trained to fight and kill. I'm more scared of them than I ever am in action. I'm more scared of them than I am of the Cong. Isn't that strange, Mom?"
He said, "The president's been shot." We just sat looking at him, and I guess we thought he was drunk or having palpitations, and he said, "Did you hear me? Turn on the radio." So Carrie, the accounts payable lady, said, "Now cool it, Mr. Kanowski. I'll turn the radio on." And he got a little frantic and said terrible things to her. And the fashions editor said a couple of unpleasant things to him. And they were squabbling with each other right across me. And then Carrie's radio started up and the newscaster was saying, oh, I want to get this just right. He was saying, reported that 3 Negroes were seen running from the overpass and 2 rifles have been confiscated in the immediate area. And how the president was going to be all right because they got him right to the hospital. And the Dallas police were throwing a cordon around the entire area. And then suddenly we couldn't hear anymore because outside it seemed that every auto horn in the city had started blowing. It was madness.
"Are you free?" You're waiting for a friend? Has he got a friend? Only you. Well, look, let's be modern about this. It's 1974, Valentine's Day, 1974. Valentine's Day. Maybe that's why the bums on Third Avenue are cutting each other's hearts out.
We all stayed at the office for the whole rest of the day, right into evening. And everybody who called was listening to a different station and getting a different version. And people from other offices would pop in and tell us what they just heard. And one man, a middle-aged, respectable man who ran the yachting magazine in the next office, came in bawling like a baby, crying, "Oh, my God, it's a communist plot. It's the end of the world." And then at last, very quickly afterward, not an hour, I think, although it seemed so much longer, they said the president was out of danger and everything was okay. And then the bell started ringing. Every church bell in New York started ringing, and we knew that he was dead. I was the first one to say it. He's dead. The president is dead. God rest his soul.
I went 10 years without being in a bar, the whole 60s. I mean, I was active then. Now I really don't know what I'm doing. I have these dumb fights with my husband, Robbie, and I wind up here. Both working when he isn't shooting up. And we're trying to save enough money to get a commune trip together, but people are so scared. He's scared. I come in here, I spend all our money, and I can't even seem to get drunk. I'm 29. I was 15 when the 60s started.
I remember the next night walking along Broadway and how weird it was to see the theaters all closed. And all these hundreds of color photographs of JFK in the store windows. Somebody must have made a fortune selling those photographs because they were everywhere instantly. Or maybe people had them all along and, oh, you just didn't notice them. In St. Patrick's Cathedral or outside it, I never got in. Hundreds of thousands of people were saying prayers for him. The entire human race went into mourning. Kings and queens came to his funeral. All the TV channels had the same things on for 4 whole days. I remember every instant of it.
Mom. Dear Mom. I'm writing this diary for you of things that I can't say in letters. Chick says that writing it all down will be helpful in straightening out my head. I'm down at the beach with Chick and all the other fellas dancing. You should see us, dozens of us, in our underwear, dancing on the beach. In many ways, this war is a wonderful experience. No, I don't mean that I enjoy it. I think one would have to be a sadist or a masochist to enjoy war. Chick is really bright, Mom. Chick says I'm getting my head. He says it's very important not to get your head in a bad place. And I said... And this is my first pot joke, Mom. It's a special kind of humor. I said, isn't Vietnam a bad place to get your head?
I'm not interested in the 60s. I wanted to be a sex goddess. And you can laugh all you want to. They used to laugh at Marilyn when she said she didn't want to be a sex goddess. She wanted to be a human being. And now they laugh at me when I say, I don't want to be a human being. I want to be a sex goddess. Shows you right there that something has changed, doesn't it? Rita, Ava, Lana, Marlena, Marilyn. I wanted to be one of them. I remember the morning my friend came in and told us all that Marilyn had died. This sweet little queen. He came in and he passed out tranquilizers to everyone and told us all to sit down. And he said, Marilyn Monroe died last night. And all the boys were stunned. But I felt something sudden and cold in my solar plexus. And I knew then what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to be the next one. I wanted to give meaning to my own time, to be the unattainable, luring love that drives man on, the angel of light, the golden flower, the best of the universe made womankind, the living sacrifice, the end cut.
I'm doing these things with Siamese dancing now, over at the Dada. You know the Dada? It's a rather well-known underground theater. It's the most famous one, as a matter of fact. In fact, in this tiny little shriveling, shrinking, curdling clot of snot called theater, El Dada is the most famous of the 412 underground theaters listed in the Village Voice this week. Which means that if you're lucky enough to work there for a week, you might pull out with a fast $5 and play to a house of 12. 12. That's the number of people, their average age, and the total of their IQs.
Mom, that letter I mailed you today was full of lies. No, not lies. It just can't tell you what it's like. That TV news you saw me on, that was a little village, one of dozens we've liberated. And you should see the natives getting all their possessions into a bundle in just minutes, and then pile the bundle on their heads and run through the streets whenever we or the Kong start closing in. They should be pretty good at evacuating by now.
We. That's my husband, Robbie, and me. We. That's always Robbie and me, Robbie and Runa. We spent most of 1961 in Alabama, doing freedom rides and voter registration, and we had to learn about passive resistance, believe me. It was hard for Robbie, him being middle class and all, he wanted to fight back. When the Southern pigs would come at us, we'd curl up in the passive resistance position, and it was hard for him. When they'd hit me, he'd start to uncurl, and I'd yell, "No, Robbie, remember what Gandhi said!" Because we read all that Indian philosophy together. We got beat for protesting the Bay of Pigs and Patrice Lumumba's assassination. We got thrown out of the UN for that one. And they beat us. Right up against that wall with the quote from Isaiah about beating your swords into plowshares. They beat us. We were right in front. You can see us in photographs in the Times.
It's ridiculous to talk about an event like that, a great president's death, from the point of view of somebody like me. I mean, what difference does it make in the long run how I felt about it? I used my savings to finish another year at CCNY, that city college, so that now I have my temporary teaching certificate and can work as a substitute. I just thought, if all of us who believed in him don't try to do some good, then his death was completely in vain. Oh, not that I'm comparing my little contribution to what he might have done if he had lived. If he had lived, he would have stopped the war. If he had lived, he would have solved the race problem. If he had lived, he would have found some way to bring us all together. I know that there are people who are cynical who say he didn't accomplish much in those 1,000 days, but I always say to people like that, I say, oh, yes, 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 oh, yes, and exactly what have you accomplished?
I needed a new Marilyn. I wanted to be beautiful. I wanted to be kind. I wanted to be fun. I set out with a ruthless plan to do men good. There was only one thing I failed to take into account, and that was that there were about 50 million people exactly like me. 50 50 million little media-manufactured racial subconsciousnesses that had systematically been subjected, as nearly as conglomerate marketing practices could swing it, to precisely the same arrogant, idealistic input as I. And the day after Marilyn died, 50 million little boys and girls rose up with one irresistible, indefatigable ambition to be the next Marilyn Monroe.
The truth is, I used to know a place that was better. It was a little hole-in-the-wall West Village coffee house called the Opera Buffo. We did plays. We made a living by peddling greasy sandwiches, and twice a night, we did plays. I was 16. Three sailors had picked me up on the New Jersey Turnpike, and when they found out I wasn't a real girl, they got tough. I was a mixed-up kid. They mixed me up a little more and left me face down on a Greenwich Village side street. I don't think I could ever have gotten up if I hadn't heard this music. Some dippy music, classical music, opera, opera. The Casta Diva it was. And I wanted to get up and run for it, but first I had to get up, then I was up, and I started dragging myself along the street like an alligator toward that music, because now I had a goal in life to reach that joint and stop that infernal screeching. So, half-stripped in my taupe turban, I trailed Gore right up that ditzy-damned street until I stood, wavering, in front of this unlikely place with the name Opera Buffo across the front doors in green and gold glitter. And I fell against the doors, and the doors fell open, and I would have fallen, too, if my turban hadn't gotten caught in a mobile hanging over the entrance. And then these shadowy figures at the rear of this empty, insane coffee house stood up, started towards me. They were dressed like a circus clown, one like something out of the Hitler Youth Movement, and a Romany gypsy, and on this little stage in the middle, a blonde girl like Botticelli's Venus was doing a dance with a quadruple amputee, and I thought I had flipped. But then the circus clown, Buffo, came into the light. The biggest eyes you ever saw. And he said in this phony Italian accent, "Started the show again, bambini. We hooked a customer." And I screamed, "Stop the mozzarella music." And he yelled, "Stop it, Acosta Diva. That's not a ladylike way to talk." I ran the length of that incredible place, right across the stage I ran, right between the blonde and the amputee, to the record player, and I took that record and I smashed it, and I smashed the pieces, and I danced on them. And then I fell backwards, right into the arms of the Nazi and the gypsy and the Corsican clown, and the clown Buffo said, "Mamma mia, here's another one, and us not making enough to feed ourselves." Because, you see, right then, immediately, he knew for certain that I was always, always going to stay.
We were the first like that in America. We were America's big chance for change. But for me, us, personally, it was the time when Robbie and I went to Harvard and learned about LSD. For the first time, Robbie saw clearly how society is just a structured game that sucks the individual up for its own uses. I think until then, he'd been just doing things for me, you know? But acid freed him and allowed him to enlist himself fully for the cause. Oh, that was the great time of drugs. The time when they were breaking the chains of lies and prejudice and television over Robbie's mind. Over both our minds. Over everybody's minds.
Mom, I want to tell you about war. I have to do it in this diary because they read our mail. Besides, I think the beach may be bugged. Okay. Look, see, we have these men hiding in the jungle waiting to kill us. Well, so if they, of course, they have us waiting to kill them. I got mad tonight and kicked over the little temple one of the fellas was building out of seashells in the sand. I said, "You killed a man today, Buster. I saw you. You ran him through with your bayonet and kicked him under the philodendron like my mother has back home. You can't kill a man in the morning and then spend the evening building little seashell temples." And I wanted to fight. I wanted to fight. I wanted to fight. But then I couldn't. Fighting is so awful. Chick gave me a Librium and talked to me until I calmed down. Chick is, wow, wonderful, Mom. He laughs when I say it, but he is my spiritual advisor. I'm getting very spiritual, Mom. Chick is turning me on to Oriental religion. Chick understands.
By 1963, we didn't feel alone because we could hear our own music. Dylan and all the blessed others starting to happen. Boys began evading the draft a lot, and we all became aware of that mindless horror going on under our name in Vietnam. And we marched. In blazing summer cities, blinded by flashbulbs, we'd walk. Chilled by a wind we made by walking. And between the flashbulbs, we'd see blue policemen and black police dogs and green soldiers and gray, gray faces. And we'd roll that river into the center of a tremendous town, and there, in blinking lights around the tops of famous towers, letters of flashbulb fire saying, "Millions march!" And we'd all run home to see ourselves on the 6 o'clock news.
When they were alive, I mean when she was alive, oh, silly Wanda, I mean when he was alive, you could never resist reading about them. It seems silly now, of course, but they had found a way of life we could all imitate. He worked so hard. He could read a half a dozen books a day. He was inspiring, encouraging, and of course so handsome and young. Young for a president. And she, well, I don't look well dressed the way she dressed, but politicians' wives since her have all tried to dress nicely. And he had been a war hero. They even made a movie about it. And it was him that popularized the James Bond books. It's true. They weren't that popular at all until JFK mentioned that he liked them. And then, well, do you remember how suddenly everyone was reading James Bond? And the movies still make millions of dollars. And he wrote books, too. And one of them won the Pulitzer Prize, really, when he was still just a senator. It even made it into paperback. And she, when she was still just a student, won the Vogue magazine Prix de Paris for her essay on "My Favorite Artist I Would Most Like to Have Known from the Past." They were from wealthy families, of course, but his had made their fortune themselves, and they were still, you know, rough, charming, brawling Irishmen, whereas she was from very old money, as they call it, and she would have been a career girl, a photographer, if they hadn't met. Oh, they were remarkable people. Everything they touched turned to gold.
The Black Rebellion was going so well in 1964 that there were riots in Harlem. And Robbie called his mother in Wisconsin and said, could we come there? That New York looked dangerous. And she said, sure. If he'd cut his hair. I mean, by her, he could die if his hair was the wrong length. I mean, the same thing was happening to millions of us. Our own parents were saying to us, knuckle under or die in the streets alone. And we started to learn what love really meant. It meant caring for one another, literally, feeding and clothing and sheltering one another. Robbie was very upset. He got into this really male, paranoid, militaristic thing about how the underground was being infiltrated by FBI and CIA men. But me? I was into making music to go with my poetry. A good vibrations trip. Lots of people were. It was a movement. Things like that. Fads and signals would just happen cross-country. It was as if a wave of love and beauty was everywhere. Growing and becoming strong. And they were going to tell us what to do with our lives, sell us to a system, tell us what we could take into our bodies even. Well, we showed them. Robbie and me were pushing speed on the streets at the lowest possible prices and working part-time in a people's drug rehabilitation center, too. We were building our own counterculture. It looked as if maybe, at last, right here on this planet and right in our own lifetime, civilization had finally begun.
Dear Buddha, the Kong I killed today had in his pockets, which I searched, for nothing must be wasted, right? The man I killed today had in his pockets a tiny little red lacquered capsule, Buddha, and in it, what do you think he had? You, whom they call the all-knowing one, what do you think he had in his pocket, Buddha? What do you think he also rolls into a little paper cylinder or sifts into a pipe and burns and inhales into his lungs before he can come into battle against me? All-seeing, all-forgiving, omnipotent, omniscient Buddha? Which I should have known, which I should have seen, but in order to find out which, I had to propel a ragged atom of burning metal into his irreplaceable heart and kill him and loot his body. Buddha, if everybody has to kill a man before he can see that all men are one, then finally all men will be one, because there'll be only one man left. Do we all have to sacrifice ourselves so one last man can finally be saved?
I threw myself at 15 with a sense of mission so strong it would have made Joan of Arc look like a whim. I threw myself into Manhattan's lap head first. I had resume photographs made, sent them out to all the important agents. I met an awful lot of important agents. I went out with several of them. Once. I sent out more photos. I met a lot of unimportant agents. I never slept with anybody for a role. That's true. I never got any roles either.
People are so confused. I was down on Orchard Street once after some movie star died, and instead of having JFK's photo in picture frames or even Bobby Kennedy or Martin Luther King, people who at least died for something, they had these pin-up photos of the girl who had killed herself. Just because, well, not for any reason, just because she had died. I mean, people seem to remember, they seem to care, but they seem to have gotten things all mixed up.
Getting confused over here, Mom. I think the world must be one. That is why I continue the war. If I did not, the Viet Cong would overrun the world. But wouldn't that be one world? Chick is helping me. He says, we must only fight to save our own individual lives and not for any cause. But I'm deceiving Chick, Mom. I am fighting for a cause. I am fighting to make the world one. I must love everybody, and I must kill the men that come at me every day and night out of the jungle. That is what you say. That is what Chick says. This is what Buddha says when I let him give me a vision. And that is what I say. I don't understand it. I'll do it. I've been doing it. I did it today. I'll keep on doing it. But I don't understand. chick understands.
Buffo was a ballet dancer who got too fat, so he opened a coffee house. Then I made my ungainly entrance. Well, nothing that I needed very badly was broken, so I was on my feet in a week, and Buffo swore that I'd be tapa dancing again, which was a joke. But I secretly studied tap from a 25-cent Fred Astaire secondhand paperback. And one night, before the 9 o'clock show, I announced to three NYU students and a Caribbean astrologer there would be a brief prologue that evening. And I signaled Corso to put on Mac the Knife. Then I proceeded to do my two time steps alternately for 15 minutes. Biting my tongue. Well, the audience was understandably transfixed. But Buffo, when he came out of shock, ran on stage and announced that next week I would do the full 4-hour version. Then he hit me in the face with a pie. I tap danced on his toes. He went on point and pirouetted. The blonde and the amputee got tired of waiting and came on stage and went into their dance. And as fate would have it, a critic from the Village Voice was there that night, and he wrote us up that week as the latest thing in drama. And so somewhere in there, the middle 60s must have passed. Because I think it was in 1966 when I had a day off in the hospital, that I realized there were now 125 underground theaters, that three of our playwrights had books coming out, and one was on Broadway, and one had a TV show, and another had bleeding ulcers. That was me. And that was the only time I had off in all those years, because right about then, the vultures... No, not vultures. Vultures eat dead things. Something that eats living things. Hyenas? Yeah. Piranhas? Yes. Piranhas. Right about then the piranhas moved in.
In 1965, I saw cops and blacks killing each other on my block in New York, and there wasn't a word of it in the papers. It was up to us to see that people knew. We were living our lives in front of television cameras. That was the way to change things. But Robbie got into political reading, and he and a lot of the cats and a lot of the chicks, too, were for a violent revolution. But American kids weren't raised for that. They'd start bomb factories, and half the time they'd blow themselves up. Besides, killing and violence were opposed to the basic message of the Beatles and Donovan and Dylan and the Doors. And the dead. Like I said to Robbie, if you really believe in reincarnation, you want to make the world better for the next time you come back.
Mom, we were dancing on the beach when they came at us out of the dark. We were all on mescaline, and I thought it was the Kong, but it was the MPs. They flashed lights in our eyes and beat us and took us in. I saw them grab Chick, but I didn't interfere. I knew it was wrong to interfere. I should not fight for others. He wasn't fighting for me. Why should he? Or is he a coward? Am I? Has he made me a coward? But we both killed today. Why didn't we kill the MPs and run off into the woods and join the runaway Kong? Because you can't take sides, right? Right. But then, what are we still killing Kong in the morning for? Chick understands.
What kept me sane all this time was something I'd do when I was alone. I'd dress myself slowly in these things I never, ever wore anywhere else. A gown that looked heavy with glitter, but actually was lovely and light and clinging. And I'd stand before the mirror and remind myself of just what it was I wanted to do. My great, liquid eyes like the great southwestern skies. My flesh, delicious as the petals of tender little flowers. My lips, dark, precious, unique. And people were complaining that you couldn't tell one of the girls in the movies from another one. They all looked alike. And then you started hearing talk that the studios were doing it deliberately. That after the troubles they'd had with Kim Novak and Marilyn and Elizabeth Taylor and all of them, that they didn't want any more movie stars, no more crazy actresses to demand huge salaries. They didn't care which woman they used, that nobody cared, because all the audiences wanted was just one supergirl after another, and that the miniskirt mattered more than the girl, that James Bond didn't care which one he killed, because they were all alike. And I guess if they felt like that about them, then they all were.
Mom, they released us. I don't know why. I don't know why they arrested us. I don't know why they do anything. But I can answer the question that I asked before. The reason it is all right to kill in battle, but not to resist authority like all those misguided pacifists are doing back home, is that it is all right to protect yourself, but not all right to take sides. I know this is what Chick has been trying to tell me all along, although he is too smart to talk about it anymore, because now they are on to us. He he pretends that he doesn't want to talk to me. I know that he is thinking that we will have to be very quiet when we go back to the beach. Because we are going back. Because we have to stay sane. Right? Right, Mom? Right, Buddha? Right, Chick? Chick understands. Right.
About 1966, the Lower East Side here started filling up with insincere kids. They were just after drugs and sex and funny clothes. And a lot of hate was slipping into the movement. Hate Johnson, hate whites, hate soldiers, hate grape growers, you know. And kids who weren't used to slums and ghettos were overdoing drugs. We left here and went to San Francisco. We crossed the country by car, thousands did. And along the way, we'd meet thousands of kids at colleges who were just getting into drugs and protest. And thousands of others who were leaving California to come to New York. We'd made mistakes in New York, sure. But California was a second chance. We gathered by thousands in the streets to celebrate with drugs and sex and funny clothes.
I have to try to tell you what happened. The Bufo was started by rejects, exiles, outcasts. So once the critics started selling it on that basis, all the crazies came. And among them were the real rot, the junkies and psychopaths that got too crazy and too crowded. They drove away your old audience, then they went away chasing the next fad, and they left us crazier than ever. All burned out. Oh, and I found out that Bufo and the others, who I'd worshipped for their energy and originality and brilliance and verve, had just been on speed all those years, while I'd worn myself out learning to keep up with them. Bufo was so tired. We all were exhausted, like sea creatures helpless to leave their element while it's slowly being poisoned by settling grime and muck.
Mom, or Buddha, or whoever you are, two Kong came out of the sea onto our beach. They came out of the darkness in little wet loincloths. They gave me pot in those little lacquered capsules. I gave them some of mine. We smiled at one another and walked arm in arm along the beach. I showed them our great seashell temple. They slipped back into the sea, and they disappeared. I wish Chick had been with me so he could tell me if those Kong were real.
I get 1967 and 1968 confused. There was the Pentagon March. Robbie spent a month afterwards sitting in a corner muttering to himself, stick flowers in their rifles. Drugs turned into big business. And all those cults grew up. Gurus and prophets and Allah and Jesus. Everybody quarreling over religion and money. San Francisco got to be just awful, just a junky slum after the summer of peace and love. We left San Francisco and came to New York to get ready for the Democratic Convention in Chicago. Only now, everywhere you went, there were these famous writers, and all of them writing about everything like it was some sort of romantic epic. I mean, people died in Chicago, baby. People you never heard about. They herded us around with guns and billy clubs and mace. I think the mace was in Chicago. I went through a plate glass window, but I was all right. But Robbie took one look at me lying there in the broken glass, and this awful look came over his face. And he and his gang grabbed the cops' billy clubs, and they fought back. And they really hurt him. Those cops. When Robbie got better, he campaigned for Nixon. He said it was the best way to tear the country down.
Mom, I think Chick is in league with the Viet Cong. All that pot, all that talk, getting everyone down to the beach. A time will come when we will be attacked by groups of false MPs who are under Chick's command. And we will all be driven down into the sea, where we will be picked up by giant Viet Cong submarines and transformed by plastic surgery into indistinguishable Cong soldiers. That is where they get their unending supply of troops. That is the truth behind the treasonable rumors of desertion from our own forces. Chick and a few more like him are in the pay of the Viet Cong. But it doesn't matter. The important thing is that I am beginning to see some pattern in it all. Yes. Wait. No. Chick is not in league with anyone. That is insane of me to think so. I have been innocently falling prey to the over-rationalistic Western tendency to try to connect everything into one great pattern. I still believe, in spite of everything, that people are basically good. They do the evil things they do for the same reason that I have these delusions. Because I am evil? But then so are they. But they are not. And I am not either. But someone must be. Someone. 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 Someone.
You hear stories now, and I don't mean just the stories about how it wasn't really Oswald who killed him, but it was really Johnson, or it was really Nixon, or Cubans, or oil millionaires, or communists, or Ruby, or all of them together. Or how they reissued that Frank Sinatra movie he liked so much, the one with that awful title, A Hole in the Head. No, I mean that you hear stories that make you wonder just how well people remember. I mean stories like that Jackie was paid $1 million to stay with him because they really hated each other, or that he was in the pay of big industry, or things that nobody could know anyway, even if they were true. And you wonder, why do people even want to speculate about such things when there's so much good to remember? Or even if there isn't, when above all, the beauty that never even got to happen is still there, waiting for us all to build.
Hey, listen, honey, now tell me. Really, wasn't there supposed to have been a sexual revolution in there somewhere? Weren't all the disguises and masks supposed to have been dropped? I mean, when interchangeable clones of Raquel Welch and a bunch of English drag queens are the current sex symbols, isn't something wrong? What made them hate women? And men, what made them hate men? Is it just because there are so many people and media and all have made them so much alike? Is that why everyone keeps harking back to another era? Any other era, any freak, any monster, anything different? Why don't we want anything beautiful? Why don't we want anything beautiful to be, to exist, to live? Is it overpopulation or what? Are we just instinctually avoiding reproduction? Stimulation, involvement, reproduction. Everybody's drunk. Everybody's drugged. Everybody's making TV commercials. There are no stars. What's wrong with them? What's wrong with me?
Chick is a traitor. I have evidence now. Today we entered a bombed-out village where all the people were dead, except that a single Kong soldier jumped at me from behind a pile of bodies and knocked me down and raised his bayonet over me, prepared to bring it down onto my head or possibly my neck. And Chick, my teacher, Chick, who was relieving his bladder and should have continued to do so, Chick, groovy Chick, turned and shot the Kong in the head and sent him flying away. I got up, and I thanked Chick, but he knew. I could tell by the expression on his face and by certain vibrations that he knew, that I knew, that he had betrayed everything we believed in, because he took sides. At a time when there was no danger to his own individual life, Chick took sides and killed to save mine. Chick is a traitor, Mom.
I made Robbie go to Woodstock. God, Woodstock! That was the last time I felt good. 500,000 people stood up together to defy what was going down. And Robbie just took a look at it and said, "Kids, they don't know what's happening. Standing out there in the open, they're gonna drop atom bombs on us from the moon." He was into heroin by this time. We'd hear stories about wonderful things. The March on Washington, priests burning the draft records, GIs themselves protesting the war, and he'd say, "Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look at the streets." And it was true. I had to admit it. It was true. The streets here on the Lower East Side had turned into the same thing as Berkeley. Just kids, streaming, hungry, diseased, drugged, crazy. But still, I'd say to Robbie that this was the time for action of some kind, the time when leaders were needed. And he'd back into the corner of some dump we were living in on a welfare fraud, and he'd wave his fix at me and scream, "Sure, let's fight for peace. Let's fight for freedom. I'm all for it. What do you want me to do? Where do you want me to start? Who do you want me to kill? What do you want me to be? Lee Harvey Oswald?"
But there are some of us who still try, to go on. My work. I'm going to have a full teaching license in just another 3 years. I'm working with subnormal, what they call subnormal children out in Jersey. They are of minorities, lost children, children whom the culture has forgotten, children who can't speak because they have never been spoken to in their homes. Children who are afraid of things they can't even name. Children without love or hope. Some of them may never be able to join the human race, but I can try. Today I mentioned to them something about him, and not one of them, not a single one of them even knew who he was. It was for a moment as if he had never been. I tried to show them that famous Life magazine with the color photos of the assassination, but it excited one of them too much, and two of the others just went crazy at the pictures of the blood.
Buffo was away sick or drugged or crazy all the time now, and
The new kind of people wouldn't show up to do their shows, and Corso, who was Buffo's lover, couldn't stand it and split. Buffo didn't know who to blame for what was happening. News came that Corso had been killed in a motorcycle accident. Corso's family wouldn't even let Buffo come to the funeral. Buffo would vanish. Cops started hassling us. We didn't know who to pay off the way Buffo did. More and more people left. I closed up one night and went looking for Buffo. Buffo came back to the Buffo alone. He put on the Casta Diva and locked the gates. He took a hatchet and cut off his hand. Tried to cut off his foot. He hacked away at his neck and face. Broke two ribs. Then succeeded in cutting his stomach open with 44 strokes. He lived for 4 days and died on Corso's birthday. Their parents wouldn't let them be buried together. The critics named an award after him the next year. This is a recording. Wait 60 seconds and leave your message.
I won't do what those people do on television. Smile and pucker and have an orgasm about floor wax. I won't pose for the porny magazines. I won't sleep with any more second assistant stage managers to get an audition as a replacement in a role after some movie star's niece has already gotten the reviews. And I won't traipse around in the court of a famous drag queen hoping for a bit part in one of their vehicles. Marilyn wouldn't have. I know that much. She started late. But she was smart. She knew when to get out. She started, I mean, really started, when she was 26. I was 26. Today. I took 74 sleeping pills a little while ago in my apartment. I just came in here to wash them down.
Well, you're safe, Mom. Chick is physically dead. They do not check every little battlefield casualty for autopsies. And besides, I used a Kong rifle. My tour of duty is over, Mom. Whoever is actually in charge has decreed that I am to be sent to what they call a methadone clinic in New York City. What it actually is, I do not know. I must spend some time there being further indoctrinated. But then I will be coming home again to make the world a better place to live in. Now I know how.
Thank God, for television is all I can say. Is just thank God for television. When they killed those four Kent State students, all the kids saw it on television and gave up on the revolution and went back home. If it hadn't been for television, they'd have had to kill four kids in every single town in America. Thank God for television is all I can say.
And yet, even after the children understood JFK's story, it was hard to make them see why it had all been so wonderful and so tragic. There's no one like that now. They can't even imagine anyone like that. They can't understand that there was a time, a space of several years, when everyone loved someone, someone bigger and better than other people. They can't understand that all the people, everyone in the world, loved him. All. but one.
Kennedy's Children by Robert Patrick. Laura Esterman played Carla. Leonard Fry was Sparger. Mary Beth Hertz was Rona. Kevin Kline was Mark. And Michelle Shea played Wanda. The play was directed by Steve Robman and engineered by Marv Nunn. Kennedy's Children was recorded in New York by Earplay, the Radio Drama Production Center for Public Broadcasting. Earplay is produced at WHA for National Public Radio under grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. This is NPR, National Public Radio.